Well, there are obviously several different hormonal contraception delivery systems, and the most commonly used, as we've talked about, is the pill. Dr. Nelson, what do physicians, patients, pharmacists need to know about that option in particular?
Well, I think that it's important that to realize how very popular it has been, how much tremendous amount of experience we've had. 80% of American women have used the pill at one time or another. And I think that really validates the safety and how it has met women's needs over the last 50 years and how it's changed over time to meet those needs. And the way we've put it together, as the dose is dropped, we shorten the pill-free interval, so we got better cycle control. We come to understand it a lot more.
And what are some of the other delivery systems that are available besides the pill?
Well, we have great new options available, and we have some very old ones, which are long-acting progestins that can be injected. We have an implantable Implanon that's long-acting progestin, very, very effective contraceptives, and those can be used by women who have contraindications to estrogen. So very, very important for us to know that there is hormonal contraception that isn't estrogen-related. In addition to that, we now have a patch that has both estrogen and progesterone in it that can be used, again, through the skin delivery and only has to be placed once a week. And we have a ring that can be placed in the vagina that only has to be replaced once a month. So things that don't require a daily pill intake, really beneficial. Nice, very even level of hormone for those women who get side effects from fluctuations in hormones.
And then, of course, there is that wonderful IUD that has the progestin in it.
Yes.
That gives us contraceptive efficacy that rivals that with sterilization. So one placement every 5 years can give you immediately reversible contraception. And the serum levels with that are so very low. They're lower than anything else because, the action is there at the cervix. And I really like your pointing out how this opens up to hormonal methods, women who might not other be candidates. Mm-hmm. Birth control is safer in every condition than pregnancy is. Women tremendously underestimate their risk of pregnancy. If you tell them you've got an 85% chance of getting pregnant in the next year if you don't use contraception, I think they'll be surprised. Mm-hmm. Most women think it's 20, 25, you know, something along that. And so they down the estimate of what their risk of pregnancy is, and they inflate their estimates from just the regular things they read about every day. And so they think that pills are hazardous, or maybe the patch or the ring, and we never hear anything about the risks of pregnancy and how important contraception is to women's health in preventing pregnancy that they're not planning and preparing for.
Do all these methods work equally well at preventing pregnancy?
No. I think that there's a huge difference, perhaps not in the potential, but in the reality. We know that, for instance, that once every 3 month injection should have a failure rate of 0.3%, but we roll it out into the real world and we see it's over 6% because women get lost on the way back for their reinjection. We've done studies at the pharmacy and see that women only fill about 8 out of every 10 of their refills, that if you go out for a whole year, 30% of women get every one of them on time, and that's within 2 weeks of the time of the refill. And then we have the studies with the pill packaging that with a computer chip in it that recorded the date and the time that the woman punched the pill out. Maybe it didn't get in her mouth, but at least it got out of the package. And we see that by the third cycle, over 50% of women miss more than at least 3 pills a month. So in those kinds of things, we're really not surprised to see an 8% failure rate. So I think it's important when we're counseling women about what their options are, this is what you get in typical use, but sort of let them know, but if you take it correctly and consistently, that you could get less than a 1%. It's up to you. Do you think you can take pills every day, or do you need to use something that might be a little bit more long-acting? Would having a ring work with you in your sexuality? You know, do you feel comfortable? I mean, this is the beautiful part of the counseling. Or, honestly, would you like to have one of our forgettable contraceptives? And that's the beauty of the IUDs and the implants. One little process in an office that takes maybe 2 minutes once she understands it, and she's got contraception for 3 years with the implant or 5 years with one of the IUDs or 10 years on label, 20 years off label with a copper IUD. So we have tremendous things. And the sad thing is the things that work the best, those three that offer us in typical use failure rates that are less than 1%, are the things that are least utilized in this country. And you just wonder what's going on.
There's been a lot of discussion about the various risks associated with hormonal contraception. What are some of those risks?
The biggest risk is venous thromboembolism, blood clots in the legs that can go to the lungs. It's not a common risk, and it's less than half the risk that women have during pregnancy. But estrogen-containing hormonal contraception has an increase in risk for blood clots. For women who have migraine headaches and have neurologic symptoms, there may be some increase in stroke risk, although with the very low dose pills that we're using in the 21st century, that's quite low. It's quite low. The breakthrough bleeding, I mean, there are other things that are worrisome to a patient, but from a medical standpoint are not terrifically risky. There's an idiosyncratic reaction with estrogen that some women see an increase in blood pressure. So those are the things that are most worrying as a physician for me with oral contraceptives.
You know, what I think is beautiful is just recently there was that publication from the Royal College showing us that women who'd use birth control pills had a far less risk of dying.
Yes.
That they lived longer, mm-hmm. they had fewer cancers, mm-hmm. and if we can get that word out mm-hmm. about how birth control
Absolutely.
Pills later in life even provide protection
Absolutely.
After they've stopped taking the pill, the residual benefit on reduction in ovarian cancer and endometrial cancer, I hate to talk about risks without a balancing of
the
benefits.
Well, there are frequently women yeah. who are concerned about how long they've been on the pill. Mm-hmm. So they're concerned about duration of use. And yet what we know is that the longer a woman takes the pill throughout her reproductive lifetime, the lower her lifelong risk of ever getting ovarian cancer, which is one we worry about a lot, and uterine cancer. So there are huge benefits with respect to cancer prevention. And in fact, the longer someone's on the pill, the better protected they are.
And to add to that, I think related to the endometrial cancer risk and the ovarian cancer risk that are reduced by long-term use of contraceptives, there's evidence of benefit in reducing that risk even within the first year of use
Yes. mm-hmm.
of oral contraceptives.
And I think answering the question about breast cancer, the studies that have come out looking at women who carry BRCA1 mutations showing that there's benefit to them in taking birth control pills.
Well, it reduces their ovarian cancer risk,
Right.
which is high, and it did not increase their breast cancer risk. And that's something I think our colleagues are not aware of. I don't think that they're aware that in these high-risk populations of women, that contraceptive steroids is actually a benefit to these young women prior to having their families, before they're ready for definitive surgery and all those things. Huge difference in the mindset of those of us who really know what the benefits are.
Well, you can't blame them, because if you look back at some of the older studies, there was a big meta-analysis in 1996 that went back and scooped up women who'd been on those ultra-high doses.
Yes.
And that showed an increased risk in breast cancer. And so that we have to do is look to today's pills
Right.
and to see the evidence coming from the CDC that regular women don't have any increased risk. The high-risk women have no increased risk of getting
Right.
breast cancer later in life. That this is very reassuring. But I think, again, we're always carrying the burden of those early pills.
Yes.
And
we
do
studies.
Have to... Yeah. And the risks are so much different today.
Now, what are the contraindications for hormonal contraception?
There are several, but some of the first and foremost absolute contraindications to the use of combined contraceptive therapy that contains both estrogen and progestin includes a history of venous thromboembolism, either a DVT, a pulmonary embolism, could be a cerebrovascular accident or a stroke that was thromboembolic in nature. In addition to that, patients with a history of coronary heart disease, there should be caution in proceeding with the use of combined oral contraceptives because of the estrogen component potentially stimulating clotting factors. I would add to that that patients, we've talked a little bit about migraine headache with respect to being a relative contraindication, but particularly patients with a history of migraine headache disorder that includes an aura, patients that experience focal neurological deficits along with that migraine headache disorder, that in particular is an absolute contraindication. Diabetic patients can also be considered to be at increased risk for some of the adverse events associated with the use of combined oral contraceptives, particularly diabetic patients whose disease is complicated by end organ damage, mm-hmm. retinopathy, nephropathy, neuropathy, their risk for experiencing a cardiovascular type event or a blood clot on combined oral contraceptives is extremely high, and we certainly proceed with caution in those types of patients.
And labile hypertension?
Absolutely.
Right, and any estrogen-sensitive tumor,
absolutely.
As you mentioned, breast, but some
absolutely.
Of those others, yeah.
Absolutely. Hypertension is one that needs to be very closely monitored.
Right.
Again, you know, patients with mild elevations in blood pressure can be maintained on combined oral contraceptives and monitored very closely.
Well, and sometimes the drosperinone-containing combined oral contraceptives may actually reduce blood pressure a little
absolutely.
Bit.
Absolutely.
So we have a new formulation, or relatively new, with a new progestin that's the anti-mineralocorticoid that can actually reduce blood pressure a little bit. So in women who have borderline blood pressure elevations, we can actually use one of those hormonal combinations to reduce blood pressure a little bit.